Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to another episode of Adventures in DevOps. This is Jeffrey Grohman. I'm the founder and principal at Grohman Cyber, a cybersecurity services firm. I'm joined by my co-panelist, Charles Wood. And today we have a guest, Phil Wilkins. He is with Capgemini. He's a senior consultant and tech evangelist. And he is also the author of Unified Logging with Fluentd. Hey, Phil, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you.
Awesome. How are you doing today, Chuck?
Doing great. After that intro, I'm feeling very evangelized and unified. So,
awesome.
Hey, you know how your ops team keeps a pile of scripts and wiki documents explaining how to perform those routine and emergency tasks that keep your applications running? They might call them runbooks or playbooks. Our friends at Octopus Deploy were thinking DevOps is about collaboration, so doesn't it make sense for runbooks to be automated from the same place as deployments? Well, Octopus Deploy is now the first deployment tool with native runbook support. And the best thing is your runbooks can share configuration settings and automation steps with your deployments. So go find out more at octopus.com.
Well, you know, just to sort of kick us off, you know, I was thinking about logging, and I think about logging all the time, being a security guy, and logging is just so crucial for so many activities that we do. But, you know, Phil, I got to tell you, I think most people look at logging as, I was thinking of an analogy. I was thinking that I think most people look at it as like snow tires. They think about it as, you know, I'm not interested. I don't care. Don't talk to me about owning more tires. But you start slipping and sliding and getting stuck, and all of a sudden you're going to go buy snow tires. You're going to put them in your car, and you're going to drive all winter long with your snow tires on, right?
So, and you can't live without them.
And then you can't live without them afterwards, right? That's it. You never go back. So, yeah. So, you know, how do you evangelize something as just, you know, let's be honest, it's not the most exciting thing in the world. How do you go about that?
You're right. It's one of those things that everybody looks at as it's tedious, and I have to, you know, as a developer, having to tidy up my debug trace to make it nice and usable in the future. People just, just delete it, or I won't bother logging. So it's really about just trying to convey some of the benefits and how you can make it a little bit more engaging. And over the years I've come across a number of really interesting and amusing stories where people have been dragged from their beds because something's gone wrong.
It's your turn for the pager, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, if the login was just that little bit better, everybody would have realized that whilst there's been a little hiccup, it's not that bad. It can wait till the morning. So, and in fact, for a previous employer, I ended up traveling around the world within a couple of months of joining them because they hadn't got their monitoring and their logging sorted out. So I ended up having to go out and try and work out why systems were misbehaving and showing people the value of monitoring in general and logging in particular. So it's those stories that you need to try and get people engaged with and the threat that they may be next.
Yeah, this reminds me a little bit. We were talking before the call and I mentioned that I worked in the data center, or maybe I was talking to somebody. I was talking to somebody else. Never mind. But I worked in the data center when I was in college. And so somebody else, I'd be working the night shift in the operations center. And we'd get a call from one of the engineers because something had gone bad, or we'd call them up because something had gone haywire. And yeah, we'd always get the training, and the training was usually, well, did you look at this log and this log and this log? And then what did they say? And, you know, backtrace it so that we could give them either better information or fix it on our own going forward. And so, yeah, I guess I always took for granted that the logs were important, but if you haven't had it save your rear end.
Yeah, and that's really the first step in actually getting the most out of your logs is, you know, just think about what if you were in someone else's shoes and you had to fix someone else's problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you at least just write down the key logs or what this error actually means, and you can build that out, you know, and build out remediation steps and the rest of it if you get to, as you mature and get better at it. But one of the things that I focused on and touched on in the book was actually the idea that, hey, hang on, you know, in this day and age, we can end up getting swamped with logs, mm-hmm. you know, particularly when you get into environments that are super or hyperscaled. So what's actually important to me? And then can I translate detecting a log event and a log record into being a bit more proactive? You know, whilst in the security world, it's quite often important to be able to do the analytics to go and see what's been going on. Has there been a series of events that is indicative of something malicious being attempted? In the ops world, sometimes you actually want to be told this little nodding debug message that a developer left in is actually a warning of something catastrophic about to happen. And if you're told and you got a bit more proactiveness in the way you monitor your logs, you can, this is a minor little thing, but actually it's very important, and I can remediate or prevent a problem before it becomes a catastrophic because your database has become corrupted or your file system's full up because someone's chucked a huge, great payload through that you weren't expecting.
I think you just sort of hit on, you know, one of the biggest, I don't want to say deal breakers, but I think it's close, is that, you know, I think a lot of people look at logging and say, well, you know, it's not just that I turn it on and, you know, I have some kind of a log aggregation, you know, system like a Splunk or something like that, but there's all this care and feeding, right? I have to make sure that my logs are normalized and getting in there correctly. And then I got to make sure like I'm not just filling up my log system and having to pay more and more and more to Splunk or to whoever's managing my storage or whatever. And it's like, you know, so now it's become not just, well, let's get those logs turned on and let's go pay for some kind of aggregation system. But now I got to have people, right, managing it, not forget the monitoring it. We're just talking about the care and feeding of it. And I run into a lot of organizations that, like you said, on the security side, I mean, we're pulling in log data from so many different sources that we are filling up storage quickly, and it becomes very expensive. And that's one of the biggest issues I see, you know, with adoption and with just the care and feeding of it, is that people just sort of like, it's at some point, it just becomes overwhelming. And I think that's a huge challenge that people don't really, they don't get it. They don't realize that until they get into it and start realizing, wow, we need to do a lot more care and feeding. And, you know, in the security logs, there's a lot of stuff you can turn off and make sure that the stuff you are interested in gets turned on, like, you know, Microsoft system logging, for instance. I mean, they'll log every single thing that you couldn't care less about. But in that mix, there's also all the stuff that we really do care deeply about. And you just have the expertise and the people to do that. So, yeah, I'll give you a chance to respond to that, but I feel like that is such a major headache dealing with logs.
It is a nightmare, and it gets worse when you get into legacy systems that people are terrified of touching. you need to know what it's doing, but nobody's willing to go in and improve or fix logs. So you have to accept what it churns out and get the meaningful information out of that to pass it back. And to your point about the volume as well, data egress, particularly in a cloud environment, can cost a lot of money. And if you're trying to pump these out fairly rapidly, you're not getting huge amounts of compression and you're throwing a lot of information out. So the egress can actually end up costing you a fortune. So you're using things like FluentD or Logstash for that matter as a tool. Allows you to start pruning the content down to what's important or what you think is important. And you can start to tease out that. And I work with WebLogic quite a bit. And it regularly reports about its self-checking. Well, actually, if it's just saying, I'm happy, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong in the logs, then why don't you just prune that out and just wait until it says, aha, this doesn't look right.
Right.
That makes sense. I want to make this actionable, and that feels fairly actionable. How do you do that? Right. Is it just a config? Is there more? I'm not super familiar with FluentD, I'll admit.
So both FluentD and on Logstash have got a lot in common. So in FluentD, it's pretty straightforward. You define in a configuration file, one or many sources of log information, and that could be quite dynamic. You can connect your logging framework directly to it. A lot of the Java frameworks can talk directly to FluentD without going via any log files, which makes life a little easier. Mm-hmm. And then what you do is you tell FluentD about the structure if it's unstructured, so it can tease out and apply some meaning to the log data. And then you just put some expressions in to start filtering it out. And you can say, okay, right, well, I'm looking for a keyword in, say, a log message that's indicative of something significant. I mean, I do a little demo with it where I've got a little log simulator that's actually got the log messages are all jokes. And I've said, okay, I'm going to just look for the jokes about computers and I'll send those onto my Splunk account. So when I run the demo, you can see all the little jokes about computers, but on my console, you can see an awful lot more in terms of jokes because all the other ones are being kicked out.
So, yeah. I like this. So you know, focusing, I guess, on the, you know, so why do I want it? Why do I need it? So I guess if I take a step back and I said, okay, you know, if I'm just enabling logging, you know, like this scenario we were talking about earlier, whether it's security logging or just infrastructure logging or whatever, like I guess the normal state of things is that you just sort of configure your log source, you know, whatever system you're talking about or application, right, to send logs, maybe it's over syslog or something like that, over to, let's say, a Splunk or, you know, a syslog ng or, you know, whatever it is, right? That's the old school sort of simple way to do things. Mm-hmm. Why FluentD? And you've already hit on part of it, but I'd love to just let you expand on that, elaborate a little bit more and talk about, you know, what are all the benefits of sort of putting this thing called FluentD in the middle and letting it, you know, so you're talking about filtering. What else are we, you know, why else am I doing this? What am I getting out of it? Why should I care? Again, you know, what's there? You know, what's in it for me to get a lot of benefit out of it?
Yeah, Phil, welcome to our sales call.
So it's a very, very good question, actually. And it's one that is easily overlooked. In larger organizations, we see quite regularly different teams using logging for different jobs. You mentioned the security and Splunk. That's quite a common combination. Splunk has got a very good reputation around supporting the security activities. But other teams might want to use other things. Elasticsearch is quite common amongst the developer community.
Yep.
And they look at doing different things with it, looking at the logs in a different way. Now, you've got a choice here. You can either put the Splunk agent in on every machine and a Logstash. Yeah. And if there's another team wanting another aspect of it, maybe the infra guys are looking at your SNMP traps and things like that. They want another different product, and that's another agent. And all of a sudden, you've got 10 agents in your environment just trying to gather up logs for different people. That's complete overkill, not to mention the actual management, and you've got to then monitor 10 different agents to make sure the agents are running and collecting data. So in the idea of unification, you can use one tool, and what it can do is collect all the different sources and then say, okay, now I'm going to split this up and send it to the different tools that want the different bits. You can either do it very simply and say, well, this source goes to that destination, or you can start getting clever and saying, well, actually, I'm going to bring these four different applications that we're all logging together, and I'm going to filter out once all the security events. So you get a nice steady stream of all the events. And because if you're trying to do it in close to real time, those events start feeding through in near real time as well. So you start to see it in time series. Yeah, which means that your logs will start to show up in your logging tools, reflecting what's happening as it happens. There's other interesting use cases as well. One of the things I learned many years ago is logging or monitoring, should I say, and the perspective of monitoring differs on your role. If you're an infra guy, you're very much a metrics. How much CPU am I using? How much memory is there? And things like that. If you're an apps dev, then you're probably going to be interested in the apps logs and really don't give a hoot about the OS level logs or the metrics. And then if you're more at the sort of business end of the spectrum, you're looking at business activity events, you know, which is still quite often manifest themselves as logs. So, you know, it's trying to work through that and understand the value to different people as well. And then we've got the dimension of modern or microservice-based world where you need very small footprint components, particularly if you're going to deploy them as part of a pod. And Fluentd and its baby brother, Fluentbit, are very, very small, tidy footprint components. So it's easy to actually bundle them up as a sidecar, or if you're just containerizing a solution, even putting it into each dedicated container and pushing it out.
No, I think it's interesting you're mentioning sort of the microservice, whether that's, you know, a very small Docker instance, or whether that's something that's running on like Azure Functions or AWS Lambda or Google Cloud Platform's version of that. And a lot of those environments seem fairly transient to me, right? So, you know, if I have to update it, then, you know, AWS goes and does this huge cleanup, or a very small cleanup because it's a very small function, and puts a new one in its place. And so if it's logging locally at all, that stuff just goes away. And so, yeah, having something like Fluentd or something that can aggregate that and send it to the right place, I really like that approach, just from the sense of, hey, I know what was going on 5 minutes ago, even though the instance that was doing the work isn't there anymore. One thing that I worry about, you mentioned the filtering though, is how do I keep from filtering out stuff that I may realize I care about later? Am I just out of luck on that stuff? Do I have to be clairvoyant or a good guesser or have a lot of experience and just know what these things are? How do I know what those things are in these different environments? Because I figure it's also going to be different, right? Whether it's on a Docker container or a server in the cloud or a functions setup.
Yeah, it's a really challenging problem. And there isn't a really elegant, simple answer. Because it comes back down to, if you're not sure what you want and you therefore go, oh, I'm going to keep everything, you're going to chew up vast amounts of resource. So the approach I tend to put forward is to say, look, okay, I'll keep everything very local So if I've got a Kubernetes cluster, I might have some local file resource allocated and I'll roll the logs reasonably quickly, but I'll keep everything there so I can go back into it if I really am desperate.
Okay.
Yeah. But anything that I genuinely believe needs to be passed on, I'll just pass on anyway, but I'll only pass what needs to be passed on. So if I don't care if it's going to another cloud service just going down to the next node. It becomes less of a design problem because you are emitting what you've got to emit regardless.
Yeah, and I love that idea too, because I think that, you can always... Well, I guess the way I think about it too is you always want to look at, you sort of need that human eye to look at those logs and say, what's in them? What do I care about? The only way I know what I care about is if I actually eyeball them and do some analysis and say, hey, that might be interested once in a while. I want to make sure that gets forwarded onto the, to my log aggregation. Or this stuff, yeah, probably not, but that can change over time where something seems, meaningless today. The application changes, the use case of how we're using that microservice or whatever it is changes, and all of a sudden that becomes more important later. So if I can jump back into the local system and say, huh, you know what, let's go ahead and enable it now because now it is something that's more important to us. I love that idea.
And that's the beauty of Fluent Data and Logstash for that matter, is it's completely config driven. So you're not changing the application, you're not recompiling it, just tweaking the config, pushing it out. And if the config is not right, then it won't break the situation. Whereas if you're trying to change your log messages, particularly in a brittle legacy system, you could break something, or people are going to at least insist on an awful lot more testing before you push a change.
One thing I'm curious about, we were talking about cloud services a moment ago. Within my whatever I'm deploying there, again, maybe I'm doing some logging within, sort of internally to it. But, let's say I'm in the AWS world and I'm also collecting, let's say, what do they call that? CloudWatch, the name is slipping my mind.
AWS is CloudTrail, if I remember.
Yeah, CloudTrail. So let's say I've got these CloudTrail logs. Can I use Fluentd or let's say I want to get those CloudTrail logs into, on-prem for me and, whatever that means. I guess it doesn't have to be really necessarily physically on-prem. Maybe it just means, in another bucket that I'm using for analysis of, logs, some form of log aggregation. Like you said, maybe I have an Elk stack in my data center, maybe I have an Elk stack in the cloud. How do you think about like those CloudTrail logs or whatever similar in other cloud service providers?
One of the beauties of particularly a Fluent D is just the sheer number of adapters that are out there, both written by the core team, but also by the community, to the point where a lot of vendors have started to just write Fluent D adapters because it's becoming so prevalent. And because the framework allows you to do that, there's quite a detailed set of libraries and APIs that you can use to build your own custom source or target plugins for Fluentd. And it means that you can then tap into CloudTrail or the Azure or the Oracle equivalents and draw that information out. And if you're in a multi-cloud use case, you may well want to do that because you need, as you say, to perhaps bring it together to a single tool to see the holistic picture, particularly if you're running your business part on, one service is on one vendor and you're taking a service from another cloud provider. You want to bring that together to perhaps understand what's going on overall in the picture. Is one cloud service causing another one to start to swamp? Well, the only way to do that is to bring the picture together.
And yeah, to bring the picture together, do the Splunks and other systems like that do that kind of a thing? So I'm sending data in from you know, maybe this microservice and this other app and, you know, some other service on AWS and, you know, and it all kind of gets piled up, maybe even in different piles. Yeah. How do you bring it back together so you can get a picture of, okay, what happened when this went wrong?
The challenge is, you know, if you're using something like Fluentd, you can connect to those different sources and just feed it to the one location if you want.
Okay.
Or, you know, a subset of it into, say, Splunk so that you can do your cross-cloud analysis. You know, someone looking at or probing all your subdomains on your DNS. And you can see that if you're collecting logs from your different firewalls and web servers across your different services. And Fluentd therefore just goes and picks that, you configure it, picks up those events and fires them into one central location. But you can divide that up. You can because you can control the routing of it to one or many locations, you can say, well, I'll do some initial analysis in each cloud. Mm-hmm. And then I'll pass on what's coming out of that that's significant. Again, it's another way of chopping down the amount of traffic that's flowing around, but still keeping some of the information that's helpful in a useful resource.
I'm curious, Phil, just, you know, we're talking a lot about, you know, sort of the guts of, you know, logging and all that. And it just sort of occurred to me that clearly you've been around technology for a while, doing a lot of, imagine, architecture and other things too. What made you, so interested in the topic of Fluentd, you know, clearly to write a book about it, but, you know, sort of I'm just curious, like, what the backstory is, like, what sort of propelled you down that path, as opposed to, you know, there's probably a lot of other areas, even within logging and you know, monitoring and everything else, metrics that, you know, it's interesting topics as well.
Fluentd is not the sexiest of the monitoring tools. You know, you hear a lot more perhaps about Prometheus and the use of Grafana because it's quite nice and visual, and Kibana and tools like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's what really took me down this route was a couple of painful lessons, I suppose, where, you know, I saw and had to deal with a number of issues. And the situation was is that the operationally there were some problems in a real-time environment. And when you're 12 hours out of sync with the team that are supporting things, they're going off going, oh my God, there's a problem. Okay, I'm just going to wipe my environment, fire it up clean, and we'll go and we'll try and fix the resultant data impacts downstream. But that creates an awful lot of noise. You know, despite repeatedly saying to them, if you have a problem, the first thing you do is package up at least the logs and fire them over to me so that I can look at them and at least try and start to figure out what might cause your problem so we can, you know, remediate it and prevent it occurring again. But, you know, having been there repeatedly, it's like, yeah, people not doing that or forgetting to do it. It's like, okay, we'll just put some automation in there and we'll keep parking some of the key log information somewhere where I can go and look at it if they start screaming there's a problem.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey, we know we have an awesome DevOps show. We love our hosts. We love what they do. We love everything that they give us every week as far as topics and ideas and things that we can do. So why not give a little back? Just go to adventuresindevopspodcast.com/premium. You can give up $9 a month. That's not very much, but every little bit helps us to get that podcast out. You'll get in return ad-free episodes. You'll get bonus content every month. And you will also be able to join a call where we talk about ideas around what you want to hear about on the show and give us ideas as well on upcoming shows, what we can ask our guests to make it so that it's relevant to you. So join us at adventuresindevopspodcast.com and join the premium.
So you kind of get into that, and it's like, okay, so that's the log unification story. And then whilst my first lessons in that kind of world predate Fluentd, I got into it because I found out when I came across Fluentd and sort of started to realize actually just about all the clouds are using this under the skin. So Google adopted it, I think it was about 2011, 2013, somewhere in that time frame, under the hood. And actually, if you look at the other cloud providers, they're all using the same technology. And with that pluggability, you know, and extensibility, and it's pretty easy to use. It's got a, its notation isn't quite standard. It's not YAML, but nor is it bloated XML. But once you've got your head around the notation, it's really easy to use, highly configurable, and you can do a lot with it. I mean, as I say, my little demo that I do just to get people's attention of this idea of being a bit more proactive, the configuration file runs to about 15 lines. It's a tiny little config, and that's a distributed configuration as well. So it's remarkably easy to use, but there isn't huge amounts of information out there. Lots of people are saying that they take notice of Prometheus and other tools, but the Fluentd is perhaps a little overlooked. And I thought, yeah, this is something that I think people should know more about.
Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy experience for your customers? I mean, let's face it, the only way you're going to know that is by actually running it on production. So go figure it out, right? You run it on production, but you need something plugged in so that you can find out where those issues are, where it's slowing down, where it's having bugs. You need something like that there. And Raygun is awesome at this. They just added the performance monitoring, which is really slick, and it works like a breeze. I love it. It's like you get the ray gun and you zap the bugs. Anyway, definitely go check it out. It's going to save you a ton of time, a ton of money, a ton of sanity. I mean, let's face it, grepping through logs is no fun, and having people not able to tell you that it's too slow because they got sidetracked into Twitter is also not fun. So go check out Raygun. They are definitely going to help you out. There are thousands of customer-centric, customer-focused software companies who use Raygun every day to deliver great experiences for their customers. And if you go to Raygun and you use our link, you can get a 14-day free trial. So you can go check that out at adventuresindevopspodcast.com/Raygun. So I'm a little curious, you know, you write a book about this, maybe you have conversations with people like us periodically. What is the ultimate outcome you want people to get from a conversation about this? Like, what do you want them to go and do once we're done talking? You know, I go home, I go back to my regular job, you know, maybe I'm doing DevOps or cybersecurity. Yeah, what should I be thinking about when I walk away?
In the perfect world, where can I buy the book? But no, in serious terms, is to go away and rethink your position about logs, even in a poor situation. You can get meaning out of it, and there are tools to do it, and it isn't a hugely insurmountable problem. And tools like Fluentd are quite easy to set up and at least get you started. Very minimum, you can use it just to go and gather up your logs and dump them in Elasticsearch or another a big data style repository of text. And you can then just start looking at it and go and seeing what can you see in terms of patterns. What can I get that might help me or make my life that little bit easier every day? mm-hmm. or better still for a developer, what can I do to leverage logging to make my life easier, so I'm not having to do more of the ops. I can focus on the dev side of things.
Yeah, that's kind of the what I was driving at is, yeah, you know, it's unified logging. It's cool technology. It, you know, it makes your life easier. But yeah, it's okay. Well, I don't want to have to, you know, troubleshoot without knowing what's going on in my system, right? Or, you know, I want to be able to do more of the dev and less of the ops, you know, for the developer. I love just the ideas behind that, because that's the real outcome, right? I mean, I'll admit I'm more dev and less ops. And so, yeah, I want to write code. I don't want to go troubleshoot the, you know, the system that my stuff's running on, because it should just work. And I derive most of my joy out of writing the code. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, okay, I've got a system here that now lets me know what's going on so that I can ignore ops until I get an indication that I shouldn't.
Exactly. And not only that, the tools teased out the significant information.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an awful lot quicker to start plowing through to try and get to the bottom of whatever's happened.
Right. So when my boss comes to me and says, hey, what the heck's going on? Or we're going to hire someone like Jeff because we just figured out that somebody's getting access to our data and that's not good. Right. Then I have a system I can go to instead of going, well, where can I look to get that information in the first place?
Exactly. You know where to go look, because it's all been pulled together for you. You then just have to start analyzing that information to get to the root cause, rather than signing into, ignoring the world of containers in virtualization. An enterprise scale solution will spread across many, many servers. And trying to get the whole picture, you could end up signing into dozens of servers, trying mm-hmm. to track an event through. That alone just takes an enormous amount of time and could be quite frustrating, particularly if you don't know what the credentials are, you don't have the privileges to look at one log file. Yep. Yeah. You can be allowed in and play to your heart's content and mine the logs if they're gathered into one location.
I think the other piece I think is worth throwing out there too is, you know, even taking a step back, we've talked about the business a little bit and their use of logs or their needs for logs. One story that sticks out of my mind for logging is way back when my team was called in for an incident where it's for a regional healthcare provider, health insurer. One of their members realized that, you know, those explanation of benefits, may not have those filled in the UK, but we get those, you know, it's basically the way our insurance company says, hey, you went to a doctor or, you know, other health provider and, you know, they did this, this, and this, and this is what they charged, and this is what the insurance covers, and this is what you're going to have to cover. And they call it an EOB or an explanation of benefits, which is pretty, you know, sort of sensitive information. And one of the members of this, and you know, who got insurance to this company, realized that he didn't have to authenticate, and he could pull down these PDF files of these explanations of benefits. And then he realized that all he had to do was increment through the numbering system, and he could pull down anybody's. Mm. So the first question that we all were asking was, okay, well, how can we see? Let's go back to the logs and let's see who's been, you know, sort of incrementally going through and pulling down PDFs. The big problem was that the PDF part of it was, you know, was one third-party provider software provider that was sort of bolted onto the big application behind the scenes, and there was no unified logging between the two. And so I was thinking about it after the fact, and I was like, well, it was a complete mess and a really difficult situation because we had terrible logging to try and sort of look through and try to figure out what happened was. So, you know, to me, the biggest gap there was that nobody from the business ever realized that, wait a second here, we may need to have to go, you know, we may need this may be a use case where we need to go back and say, okay, you know, when were these records accessed? Who were they accessed to? Like, who was logged in and who was accessing them? Because the access logs were in one place and they were not married to mm-hmm. what user actions were being taken while that session was active. Like none of that was being logged, not in a unified way. And you sort of need, you know, somebody from the business side or somebody who's like thinking about it all the way across, not just what happens if my little piece of the application breaks and, you know, we need to troubleshoot something, but what happened, you know, what do we need to be able to know or go back to? What are the different scenarios? And no one ever identified that. And I feel like, you know, a big action item is if your business hasn't done that and you don't really know, you know, you're, you know, an app dev or you're an engineer or you're a security person, no one's ever like thought all that through. You should start thinking that through now before you have something, whether it's a security incident or whether it's just a troubleshooting incident, but, you know, getting that clarity of what you might need to go through and what logging you may need. You want to do that before, you know, the stuff, you know, starts to happen around you.
Yeah. And the first step in that is quite often just trying to figure out how severe the situation is. You know, if it's just, yeah, you know, a few people, then you can see in the logs, it's only like a dozen files that have been pinched, then the consequences are perhaps not as severe as if it's been going on for months and months and months. But you don't know that if you're not able to look back at that information.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, like Jeff was talking about, I mean, some of it was just diving through and, okay, we've got this information here and that information there and this other information here, and we're trying to get the whole picture of what's going on. And some of it was even third party, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I can just imagine the nightmare. And yeah, if you have all this set up ahead of time, then it's like, well, let's go look and let's walk through what's going on.
Yeah. And quite often the people that know what information is actually available are the people that build each part. So yep, it becomes quite easy for them to say, oh, okay, I know about this bit. And I know these kinds of log events are important. So if you have a common standard that says, look, okay, if you think this is important, then fire it into a central location. It becomes a lot easier then, and nobody has to necessarily own end-to-end every aspect of it, because big systems, you know, requires a lot of thinking space to be able to work out, you know, what's going on, what are the possible sources end-to-end, and knowing exactly how it's deployed. And very few people do have that knowledge.
Yeah. So I guess I can hear people thinking, okay, so this makes sense. This is something I probably ought to set up at work, you know, or maybe, you know, in my own systems. And then they're thinking, boy, how much work is this going to be?
Oh, it can get to be quite substantial if you try and inhale and solve the entire problem when you've got nothing from the outset. So the way to do it is just do it incrementally, a little bit at a time, just try and, you know, demonstrate there's a little bit of value in pulling together certain logs. Yeah, just focus on perhaps one application that's distributed, pull that together. And once you can see a little bit of benefit and value, because it won't take too much effort to set up, you can start to grow it. And adding to a logging unification and log analytics story can be done in a very incremental manner. And it's a story of refining and improving, I think, continually. And of course, if you've got the developers engaged with it, they will quite often help you jumpstart the whole process, because they'll know what's important. Or believe that what's important, and if they're in a DevOps world, they're probably going to really know what's important. But they at least will know what sources are available and show you how to connect those sources up. And the FluentD model is highly distributed, or can be highly distributed. So what you could do is you can set up a node and just say, right, okay, I'll just accept whatever's coming in. I might park it locally until we've developed the rules that say, right, this is significant, I'll send this into my on-prem Splunk instance, but the rest of it I'll just rotate as an aggregated catalog within my cloud environment. And you can then just improve and refine the rules over time. And that's really how I've done it, is not gone big bang and tried to go, look, we've got to monitor absolutely everything now. Yeah, it's an absolute, you know, because we can't, we haven't got any sight of what's going on and we've got a problem. It's a case of, okay, I'm going to just monitor these parts because I think these are probably the most valuable parts of the system. Yeah. And I'm just going to, you know, make the process low profile, and it can grab the logs and push the logs out. And setting up Fluentd just to trail a few logs is once you've got a hang of the syntax, it's minutes worth of work.
So yeah,
I
was going to say a lot of things that I found figuring out how to do the first one is most of the work. And then after that, it's okay. I know how this goes together. So now I can bolt the next one in and the next one in. This one's a little bit different, but I know that these parts are the same. So I can go figure out the rest and you can kind of move, yeah, piece by piece like you're talking about there.
Yeah, the hard work comes in trying to get the filtration right and trying to recognize what events are really important to you. And you go from just collecting for trend analysis and things like that to trying to be proactive. That's the real trick. And that's a story of knowledge more than anything else.
Awesome. I agree. I love logs. That's how I started the conversation too. To me, it's just the most, they're so interesting and there's just such golden nuggets that are, you know, just waiting for you to find them in those log files.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the famous stories about people putting quite humorous log entries in. So watching for those, just put a simple filter in there for the fun of it when you're first playing to look for these sort of things is quite entertaining. I found some interesting ones in the past, and one or two that are best not repeated.
What would you share with us? What was maybe the most surprising or funny that's, you know, appropriate for the podcast?
I've seen a couple of times people doing when they throw exceptions, they log it and go, hey, Geronimo or something of that variety.
Right.
And people can make some quite funny comments about the if they're logging the data that they're manipulating, it can be quite funny. You occasionally see the odd joke about the payload, you know, if person equals deceased. It's like, yeah, here's another for the grave.
Right.
And things like that, which, yeah, when you're not expecting it, it's quite entertaining.
Right. Or when you're stressed, it's like just unexpected.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it lightens the day when you're under pressure.
Do you feel like you've maxed out in your core areas of expertise in programming? Not sure what to learn next or how that'll help you get to the next stage of your career? Let me help. I'm starting a program to help developers move up in their careers using proven techniques and by starting a podcast in order to advance. Right now, I'm only scheduling calls to see where you're at, where you want to go, and how you can get there. I'm not doing any sales pitches. You can schedule that call at devchat.tv/next-level.
All right. Should we transition over to picks?
Let's do it.
All right. So Phil, I'm not sure if you caught on to this, but we try to do, you know, something that we pick on a, you know, on a session or you know, episode by episode basis, something that has sort of caught our attention, something that we're using or playing with now, whether it's something we watched, something we see, something we're playing with, piece of technology, could be anything. A lot of times I'm I love books. I tend to go, you know, gravitate that direction. So I'll start with a Patrick Lencioni business management book that I read just recently. And I just think it's, the more I think about it, the more applicable I have found it to be in so many situations. So it's, his book is about this one, he's published several books. This is called Silos, Politics, and Turf Wars, I believe. Politics and Turf Wars. And it's all about, his books are all about, they're business fables. So they just sort of read as a story. But in this one, he is really getting into, like, how do some companies really avoid all those sort of turf wars and silos of, hey, you got to work through that department. That's not me. You got to go over there and it's them and they're the ones who are doing it, right? So now I got to go up to my manager, up to their manager, back down to them so that we all can all talk to each other and we have this sort of square going on. And he talks about like, you know, like how do we deal with that? How is it that some companies have avoided that? Like really successful companies don't have that kind of just, you know, nonsense going on, and how do they do it? You know, I won't spoil it, but I think it's a great book. It's a quick read. I mean, you probably read it in a couple of hours, but really great insights that, I mean, especially if you're trying to do things in the DevOps world where we're trying to break down silos, it's just so applicable.
Oh, yeah.
For me at the moment, I suppose with people tagging the title evangelist to my role in the last couple of years, I recently read a book published through Pact by a guy that I've had dealings with at Oracle about being a technology evangelist. And it's really interesting, the insights. He basically, it's a collection of interviews with, you know, some really well-known names that of people that go out and they present at conferences and talk about technology and things like that. And some of the insights that the book shared, not only in just presenting and talking about technology, you know, on the conference circuit and things like that, but, you know, how they approach their day-to-day activities and break down problems. It was absolutely fascinating reading it. And it was quite good because it was, you know, because it's an interview. Each interview was about 10, 15 pages. And you could just take a little bite each time. Read one interview and just pick out the people that you perhaps have heard of or know to start with. And then go and look at the others. And that was an absolutely lovely book. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was called. I can't quite see it on my bookshelf at the moment, but it was an absolutely fabulous book, and I'd recommend it to anybody. It's not tied to any one technology. It's more about the communication and approaches and mindsets to be successful and effective in utilizing it and communication, really.
Interesting. Yeah, get us the title and we'll make sure that we link it up. I'm going to throw in, and yeah, it was funny because I was looking at what I was going to pick, and I'm going to pick a book just like everybody else. I just finished Storybrand.
Oh.
I can't remember the name of the author. Let me open up Audible. But wow. I've been working through a whole bunch of different ideas and things, and it was
his podcast. He's
Donald really, Miller.
Yes. Yes. Really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at it and I'm looking at the websites on devchat.tv, and, you know, I'm reworking a whole bunch of stuff, and, you know, Jeffrey's kind of been privy to a lot of that because I'm involving the hosts more than I have in that, because I want the shows to be, you know, things that the hosts enjoy doing, but also things that the audience has some say into. And so just going through it and going, okay, you know, this isn't just here's some tech, but it's, here's this journey that we're going to take you on. Here's the outcome that we're working toward. Here's how we're going to, you know, kind of go together and guide you to what you want, and then also guide each other to what we want. And so anyway, I really, really enjoyed it. And it kind of hit me at the right point of time where I was at. And so, I really enjoyed that one. Another one that I read, and I kind of went back and forth. Like I listened to it on Audible as well. I listened to a chapter and I'd be like, oh, that was awesome. And I listened to the next chapter. And I'm like, he's kind of an idiot. And it's Green Lights. It's the memoir by Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, I heard about that. That sounds really interesting.
It was, he has an interesting outlook on life. And I mean, you know, he talks about his childhood and you're going, well, yeah, you know, so you're just going to approach things differently with parents like his. But yeah, just the way that he kind of, I don't know, like the way his epiphanies come to him and things like that, deciding to do this, that, and the other. But it was interesting too, because like, I think he was in like every romantic comedy for like 4 years. And then it never occurred to me that he wasn't in the romantic comedies anymore, because I'm just like, oh, you know, well-known actor is in big name movie. But he made a decision that he didn't want to be in the rom-coms anymore and actually was turning down scripts and, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm just sitting there again, it kind of hit me at the right moment. Okay, you know, how does my journey compare to this? And, you know, I was inspired by parts of it and I really enjoyed those. Some of it, I'm just sitting there going, yeah, I don't identify with this at all. But anyway, it was really, really interesting to kind of see a perspective different from mine in some pretty significant ways. And yet at the same time, see that we kind of settle into some of the same things that are important to both he and I. And so anyway, I enjoyed it for that and just making me think. So that's Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey.
Cool.
Right. I love books. I will pick books every week if I can. So
yeah, I agree. I love this. I mean, there's just, yeah, whether you're reading them or listening to them.
Hey folks, if you want Phil's book, go get it. It is Unified Logging. I'm going to butcher the name. I am so sorry. With Fluent D, I guess. I guess
that's close. Right. Yep.
Okay. Didn't butcher it. So anyway, we have a coupon code. I'll put it in the show notes. Coupon code gets you 35% off anything at Manning, not just his book. So go pick up Phil's book and then go browse through and see what else you want. But yeah, we'll have a link and a discount code in the show notes. And so you can just tap on through, put that in and pick up that discount.
Well, great. Well, that I think that's a wrap then for another episode of Adventures in DevOps. And look forward to hearing and seeing you guys all the next time around.
All right, max out, everybody.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.